Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
On today's Fantasy Baseball on 15, we'll take a look at a resurgent Royal and relievers on the move.
Like death and taxes, Dodgers been a Dodger.
I have not had the three cold brews yet.
It works great in a fantasy league.
I'm just glad I am not at the dentist.
Fantasy Baseball on 15 on The Athletic.
Welcome to Fantasy Baseball in 15, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. This is Tuesday, July 27th. I'm Al Melker. I'm here with Derek Van Riper and DVR. Let's start off with a whole bunch of Angels news items. And of course, that needs to start with Mike Trout. He's not had any setbacks, so there's no definitive news then from the doctor's visit that he had on Monday, but also then still no timetable for Trout to return or even to resume baseball activities. Anthony Rendon is probably at least a couple weeks away from returning from his hamstring injury. And to just add to the list here, Jared Walsh exited the Angels game on Monday against the Rockies with abdominal soreness. He'll be evaluated on Tuesday. And one more note from the Angels here. There's still no word if Alex Cobb will make his scheduled start on Thursday against Oakland. He has been dealing with a blister. Francisco Lindor is likely out until mid to late August with his oblique injury. So DVR, anything actionable here? I assume that the path to take is to stash. Do you see anything differently there?
Tread carefully if you are adamant that you have to hold Lindor in a shallow league. I think there could be some circumstances where you'd actually want to let him go.
All right. Alec Manoah, his trip to the IL is apparently going to be a short one. He is expected to start this Saturday against the Royals. He's been out with a back contusion. Nick Castellanos. Now, here's another example, DVR, of somebody that I will count myself among them, had some optimism that he would only miss a game or two with his wrist injury. Then after missing roughly a week, went on the IL. He is now scheduled to resume baseball activities on Tuesday. So Castellanos finally making some progress. And this is a strange one too, DVR. Javier Baez, he has a bruised heel. He was expected to miss a game or two, but then he did appear in the Cubs game on Monday against the Reds and walked it off with a pinch hit single. So I don't know if that means we'll see Baez again on Tuesday, but doesn't look like that injury is very serious for him.
Yeah, good timing since they might be trading him here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, maybe that sped up his return a little bit. Hard to know. A couple of Braves notes. Waskar Inoa is scheduled to begin a rehab assignment at the Braves Florida Complex on Tuesday, so good news there. Ian Anderson has been playing long toss, and he's on track to throw off of a mound later this week. Ryan McMahon missed his second straight game with the Rockies. He's dealing with lower leg stiffness. Jake Fraley, who's been on the COVID-19 IL, he's slated to start a rehab assignment on Tuesday with AAA Tacoma. Few closer notes here, or reliever notes. Taylor Rogers left his appearance for the Twins on Monday against the Tigers with the spring middle finger, so maybe that affects some trade plans there for the Twins, and certainly in the short term should affect their closer plans. Anybody short or long term DVR that you would speculate on there?
Of this group, I mean, I actually think in Minnesota, Tyler Duffy is the kind of guy that could end up getting some saves if Rogers gets dealt. So I think he's the guy that prior to the weekend, prior to the deadline, I'd like to add in first come, first serve leagues, because he'd be really good if he gets a chance to close. And if he doesn't, it's not as though he has no value at all. So he's the guy I'm most interested in. It's interesting that it's come back around to Scott Barlow, at least for now. I keep thinking Josh Stalmont's going to take it away because Barlow's the guy that I liked at the beginning of the season. Stalmont looked really good earlier in the year. I think Kansas City is like a perpetual merry-go-round for save opportunities. So I'm less interested in taking shots there because I don't know if they're just going to settle on one guy for these final 2 months of the season.
Yeah, it was interesting that Barlow came in for the two-inning save on Monday against the White Sox. I don't know if Greg Holland is somebody that they'll move or how many suitors their next that there would be for him. But, yeah, it would seem like Barlow maybe is inching towards a little bit more usage in that closer's role, but hard to tell at this point. And a couple of relievers that were traded, Cubs trading Andrew Chafin to Oakland for outfielder Greg Deichmann, and right-hander Daniel Palencia. And this trade actually interests me because I'm really curious to see if Deichmann gets some playing time for the Cubs down the stretch here.
Yeah, the kind of guy that could actually be pretty useful to us as fantasy players if the playing time is there. Back at AA in 2019, 11 homers, 19 steals in just 80 games, 4 homers and 7 steals in 60 games at AAA this season, doing it with good average and a good OBP. So kind of a mystery box sort of player, but one that brings plenty of tools. And the Cubs' upper level minor league depth is basically non-existent. So if more trades happen, like a Chris Bryant trade specifically, I think that frees up a regular spot in the lineup that a guy like Deichmann could take over.
All right. And then another trade, maybe with a little less impact, but the Pirates sending Clay Holmes to the Yankees. And I saw this sort of soft-pedaled in some comments on Twitter. Holmes is somebody who actually kind of caught my attention, more for like score sheet purposes, that kind of format. A ground ball pitcher who, at least as of maybe a couple weeks ago, had the lowest average launch angle on grounders that he allowed. It's a kind of a niche skill, but it's really useful for limiting base hits. And I think probably though his fantasy appeal is limited to sim type leagues.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the Monday standouts. Not really too many to talk about because of kind of a smallish slate, but we'll talk about Jorge Soler again because, again, for the second day in a row, coming off of a two-homer game, this time against the White Sox. And I'll just reiterate the analysis from Monday's show, which is that Soler's lack of power was really puzzling up until, a couple days ago because he was hitting the ball really hard and not clear what made the difference this season, but maybe it's just regression all happening in 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of a correction here recently, and I think the plate skills in terms of the strikeout rate and walk rate are right in line with that 2019 48 home run season. He's hitting the ball in the air just as often as he did that season. He's just not being rewarded as often when he does it. So I think we could all look back at that 2019 and go, a 28.1% home run to fly ball rate. Not the best metric in the world, but also probably not the kind of thing you're going to run year over year either, even if you have big power as Soler does. I think he's the kind of player, Al, that could lead the league in home runs between now and the end of the season, especially if you want to roll that date back to Sunday and say, let's start on July 25th and say, who hits the most home runs between now and the last day of the regular season? Soler could easily be that kind of player, and run production will come with that. The batting average will be better than it has been to this point. So I know there have been some shallow mixed leagues this year where he's become available. I picked him up maybe a month or so ago in mine, and I'm trying to hold on to him because I think the playing time will be there, and I think he can be a difference maker.
Yeah, if he is out there, I think that's a good idea. Maybe even in 10-teamers to pick him up. And you were a step ahead of me, DVR, because I was going to ask what you thought he would do rest of season. And I think that's definitely a probable outcome for Soler. So if he's available, I think he is a must add. And I don't think Andrew McCutchen is likely to be quite as available, but He's having a really interesting season. Hit his 18th home run on Monday against the Nationals. Also his 13th double. And that's always kind of an interesting ratio when you see a hitter hit a lot more home runs than doubles, because that usually signals that they're just fly ball crazy. I don't think that's the case with McCutchen, but just a lot more power than we've seen from him in a long, long time. And when I say that, he has a 221 ISO. That is his highest in 7 years. So are you buying this both rest of season and maybe looking ahead to 2022?
At least for the rest of the season. I mean, the age is a factor, right? He's already 34, so he'll be 35 in October. I think the profile's changed a lot, because the last time he had power like this, as you said, back in 2014, he had a 314 batting average that year, right? I mean, he was an MVP candidate that year. So that was the elite sort of McCutchen that we saw showing power at that level. He doesn't have the other pieces to go with it in his game anymore. Still runs a little bit, though. He's 6-for-7 as a base dealer this year. Might get to 10 bags between now and the end of the season. And I would say that the 237 average he's hitting right now is probably a tick on the low side. It looks like the bat and the bat X, which use a lot of Statcast information in the projection, have him at 254 and 261 respectively the rest of the way. So I think he's less of a drain on batting average than he's been so far. And I think the power generally does hold up on a per game basis here on out.
All right. Well, let's look at a couple of players who are pretty widely available. Kyle Farmer hitting his 9th home run of the season against the Cubs on Monday. Also his first triple of the year. And he's on a legit hot streak over the last 30 games. A 295 batting average and 4 home runs. So is Farmer somebody maybe who's starting to force himself onto the mixed league picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think he, at least the 15-teamer, like the deeper leagues we talk about for sure, I think I'm still skeptical of his overall ability as a hitter, but he is not without value, especially in that ballpark.
Yeah, there's always that. Yeah, it's because his profile doesn't necessarily translate to those kinds of results elsewhere, but in that ballpark, it'll definitely play. And Matt Manning with another okay start, which is an upgrade over what we saw from him initially. 5 innings deep against the Twins. Did give up 4 runs, but on only 5 hits and a walk, 4 strikeouts. So if you look at Manning's last 3 starts combined, 16 innings, 7 earned runs, 11 strikeouts, 6 walks, and a homer. So other than the home run, not terrific ratios, but the sort of profile that would play in a good 2-start week. But I also want to note that when I looked at that, I thought, oh, well, maybe Manning's really doing a great job of managing contact. In those 3 starts, he's given up 6 barrels on just 46 batted balls. That is a horrible ratio. So is there any kind of value here at this point for Matt Manning?
No, I think he's more of like a buy low in a keeper dynasty league if you can find someone who's scared off right now. And look, I understand if you are scared off right now because some of the early underlying numbers are pretty ugly. I'd be very careful with him as a streamer for all the reasons that you mentioned.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What a segue. Let's talk about the streaming possibilities for the Tuesday slate. A potential streamer on streamer matchup. Taylor Wagner going for the Diamondbacks. Dane Dunning for the Rangers. They each get a really good matchup. so we'll start the list off with those two. Jose Suarez with a great matchup. Rockies in Anaheim. Maybe the only problem there is he goes up against Austin Gomber. We got Logan Webb with a very tough matchup at home against the Dodgers. Spencer Watkins, I think we add him to the list just solely because he's going to face the Marlins, who have been the worst offense in terms of WOBA over the last 30 days in the majors. And Brett Anderson, also a nice matchup for him at Pittsburgh. So Widener, Dunning, Suarez, Webb, Watkins, Anderson, who do you like?
I think I like Dunning first, Widener second. I think Webb's matchup against the Dodgers is enough for me to stay away from him. If I'm just chasing the win, I'm more comfortable with Brett Anderson than Jose Suarez. I think Suarez is more likely to get you 6 or 7 strikeouts. Anderson might get you 2 or 3 in a 5-inning start. But I think with Suarez, I'm always worried about the possibility of a shorter start. Sometimes that just happens to him. Watkins, I don't really like the stuff at all. The only reason I'd think about him is the matchup, and even then, I'm probably only picking him up in deeper mixed leagues. I don't think I'm throwing him out there in a 10 or a 12-team mixed league, because I'm just not sure there's enough of a ceiling there.
All right. And I just want to go back to Logan Webb here for a second, because obviously the offense that he's facing can do a lot of damage. But we got Julio Urias pitching for the Dodgers, and I featured him in a piece that's now up on The Athletic about pitchers who have given up a lot of home runs lately. And not only has Urias given up a lot more home runs lately, but he's not striking out very many batters. So is he someone to be feared at this point as an opposing pitcher, or maybe somebody, if you've got him rostered, that you just don't start automatically?
Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily an automatic start anymore. And I think ever since the sticky stuff crackdown started, the stuff from Urias hasn't been quite as crisp. So, you know, take what you will from that. I don't know if he's a bad pitcher because of anything like that. But I would just say the autopilot approach to Urias is probably no longer acceptable.
All right. So just something there to keep in mind. And do we have anything for the gambling spotlight this week?
Real quick, the American League Rookie of the Year odds, I think, are pretty fascinating. Adolis Garcia is minus 130 to win the award, and I think it's actually closer than that. Luis Garcia probably should win it. He's been the best AL rookie by WAR. He's plus 375 at BetMGM. And Randy Arozarena, as we saw at the end of last season in the playoffs, he's plus 900. He could close the gap on Garcia with a big final 2 months. So I would go with Garcia or Arozarena and not bet the favorite in this case, because I think the odds on both of those two players are pretty interesting at this point.
Yeah, and always do a bit of a double take to realize that Arozarena is still rookie eligible. So, yeah, interesting stuff there. So, on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of Fantasy Baseball 15 and just ask that if you do have an opportunity to rate or subscribe to the podcast, that you do so, and we thank you in advance. So, for Derek Van Riper, I'm Al Melchior, and we'll be right back here on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.